you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Any commercial advertising you may hear in this program is of the sole discretion and benefit of the host of this program you are listening to. Revolution Radio does not endorse any commercial products, nor does it accept monetary compensation for on-air advertising of commercial products, nor will it ever. We are and shall remain 100% listener-supported. Any product advertising on this program are considered used at higher risk, and Revolution Radio shall not be held liable for any claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Raw Deal, right here on Revolution Radio. This 29th day of December, our last show of 2023, where I'm delighted to have as my featured guest today, Alexander Baker, whom I've known as Ace Baker, who's just a brilliant guy. He's a musician, a videographer. He's a student of 9/11. He's also earned a JD, and he's a brilliant attorney. I thought we'd begin with some of the latest news stories, get Ace comments, and then turn to issues he might like to address on this very last program of a rather tragic year, 2023, where we're all hoping 2024 is going to be better for us all, and where I seem to have, tell you what, I'm gonna redo this one second here. Ace, I want to begin with the top 10 stories of 2023. Get your comments on each and every one as a review of the past year. Number one, and these aren't in the order of importance, they're all roughly of equal importance. Number one, Ukraine. NATO loses, Russia wins. Putin's admitted he was naive about the West. What it really wanted was Russia's disintegration. The West was determined to break Russia apart after the collapse of the Soviet Union, believing multiple states, based on the country's ruins, would be too weak to resist outside influence, President Putin has said. In an interview aired a week ago Sunday, Putin admitted he was naive early in his political career, even though he had a solid background in Soviet intelligence. The Russian president said he believed the West understood Russia had become a completely different country after the collapse of the Soviet Union, and that there were no further ideological differences warranting a serious standoff. According to Putin, when he saw Western efforts to support terrorism and separatism in Russia two decades ago, he thought it was the inertia of thinking that was to blame. They just got used to in the habit of fighting the Soviet Union. In reality, the West was deliberately trying to undercut Russia. After the collapse of the Soviet Union, they thought they had just to wait a little longer, then they could break Russia apart as well. According to Putin, the West saw no need for the existence of the world's largest country. It would be better, as suggested by former National Security Advisor Zbigniew Brzezinski, to divide Russia into five parts and then subjugate them one by one. The alleged Western plan, he alleged, hinged on the premise several smaller states would have no weight or voice of their own, would have no chance to defend their national interests the way the Russian Federation has been able to do. Ukraine's military, just as a sign of their defeat, want 500,000 more soldiers to join the fight, but where are they going to get them? Meanwhile, Colonel Douglas McGregor, one of the most thoughtful commentators on the war, observes, that's the number that they've lost in the war, 500,000, which is 10 times worse than World War I. This war is done. Meanwhile, the Russians have sent a special flight squadron to Washington, D.C., laying out terms of surrender. They include the following: complete Ukraine surrender, complete surrender of military equipment, Russian territory from Kharkov to Odessa, giving Russia complete control of the Black Sea coast. Western Ukraine cannot join NATO or have any military aid. Russia does not care who controls Western Ukraine and has openly offered it to Poland. Put it bluntly, the Ukraine war is over and Ukraine lost. Here's an editorial opinion from Hal Turner. Russia wanted to get billions of dollars of the best equipment and NATO-trained troops. It got exactly the farmland it wanted. It lost about 30,000 and killed 300,000 plus, as we're observing, closer to 500,000 plus NATO advisors. Russia's military-industrial capacity has tripled. NATO's reserve equipment and arms is non-existent now. The 20% of Ukraine they conquered are Russia and Russian-speaking. Not only do they not hate Russia, they support Russia. Energy prices have tripled, I think actually quadrupled, after the bombing of the Nord Stream pipeline. Europe is on the verge of an economic collapse. NATO and the U.S. have been proven to be a paper tiger. Here's a map of Ukraine. I have heard reports that Putin is willing to divvy off parts to Romania, parts to Hungary, and parts to Poland. In my opinion, Ukraine cannot be allowed to continue to exist as a nation. Here's some observations about it by a commentator.
Western governments are waking up to the cold, hard truth that the war in Ukraine is lost and the entire future of geopolitics have been changed forever. In recent weeks, we've seen a plethora of new Western articles that are saying the hard truth out loud. Here is the Wall Street Journal stating, it's time to end magical thinking about Russia's defeat. And here is a foreign affairs article written by Richard Haass, one of America's most important geopolitical think tank advisors, advocating for the U.S. to redefine what success means in Ukraine. It sounds like a confession, but it's simply how fast things can change. Let's go back to May 2023, when U.S. Senator Lindsey Graham personally met with Ukraine's Zelensky and delivered this message.
Free or die.
Free or die.
Now you are free.
Yes.
And we will be.
And the Russians are dying.
It's the best money we've ever spent. Days long.
Now is it.
Best money the U.S. government has ever spent? Wow, what a statement. It sounds like Lindsey Graham is in it for the long haul and committed to fighting for Ukraine for however long it takes. But look at how fast Lindsey completely reverses his position in a new interview given just this past week.
So I will not vote for any aid until we secure our own border. Reform asylum, reform parole is possible to do. Democrats don't want to do it. All Republicans want to do it. I'm not helping Ukraine until we help ourselves.
I'm sorry, what was that? I'm not helping Ukraine until we help ourselves? What happened to the best money we ever spent? Honestly, I feel bad for the Ukrainians who were told by Boris Johnson to walk away from a peace deal in March 2022 and instead fight for their freedom. Now the Financial Times reports that funding to Ukraine will officially run out by the end of the year. The reality of the situation is the West grossly miscalculated how to deal with Russia. The West thought if we could band together, throw hundreds of billions of dollars to Ukraine, we could cripple Russia's economy, force an uprising amongst Russian citizens, and who knows, maybe even start a revolution and overthrow Putin as president. It was a lofty goal. But to be honest, it was too emotional of a goal and not at all realistic. We know for a fact the U.S. government would love more than anything to overthrow the ruling governments in Russia and China. Nothing would make U.S. politicians happier than seeing these countries turn into liberal democracies. But once again, we need to remove our emotions and simply look at the facts.
I would say looking at the facts is indispensable. Ace, I'd like your comments on my number one story, namely Ukraine loses, Russia wins. Your thoughts?
Well, I mean, the area now called the Ukraine has been one of the most fought over and valuable pieces of real estate for literally thousands of years. I think like a thousand or more years ago, it was called Khazaria. And when this latest episode of the war over Ukraine broke out, I said at the time, well, it looks like the push is on to make the state of North Israel. And that still might very well be what's going on here. So, I mean, Ukraine is, first of all, geographically situated in a very key place and long has been. It's the gateway between Europe and the Far East. I mean, it was like the gateway to the Silk Road, you know, back in the days when it was Khazaria, right? And I think that's still true. There's rich, rich farmland there, very, very valuable. And there's also big stores of uranium in the Ukraine. So most likely that's what people are actually fighting over. But look, I don't have a dog in this fight. I don't buy into the framing of the whole debate, which is, you know, what are we, the U.S., what's our interest in this, and, you know, what's Russia's interest? I simply don't believe anymore in these mythological creatures called the state of Ukraine or the state of Russia or the state of Israel or the state of the United States. I just simply don't believe there's any such thing as the national interest or any of that. And when I had to laugh. I don't know if my audio was on, but you have these so-called leaders talking about, well, now these people are free. I mean, that's just nonsense. The struggle is not between Russia and the Ukraine. It's not between Israel and Hamas. The struggle is between rulers and the people. And that's always been the struggle. And everything else is just posturing based on a religious belief in these mythological creatures that we're all supposed to believe in. And I just simply I don't believe in them. I think if people want to actually be free, all they have to do is stop believing in the propriety of a ruling class. As long as the debate is who's the right person to sit on the throne, whether you're talking about the throne of the Ukraine or the United States or Israel or Russia or anywhere else, that's just simply the wrong question to ask. And we've been putting different rulers on different thrones forever, and it never solves the problem. The problem is the belief in a ruling class at all.
Right.
We need to just forget about that.
Excellent commentary. Here's my top 10 story number 2. Houthis create chaos. The Houthis have Biden by the short hairs, writes Mike Whitney. Yemen said it would stop the blockade of Israeli-bound ships as soon as sufficient food, water, and medicine are allowed to enter Gaza. Guess that's asking too much, observes Elizabeth Murray. Yemen's Houthis military has shown how a small army can take on the American empire and win. They have shown how courage, resolve, and commitment to principle can act as a force multiplier, allowing a far weaker military to punch above its weight. They've also shown a few well-placed missiles in key locations on the world's most critical shipping lanes can send tremors across a global economy and shake the rules-based order to its foundation. In short, the Houthis have shown that David can bring down Goliath without breaking a sweat, provided that David maintains his perch along the Bab al-Mandab Strait. Here's what's going on. The Houthis occupy an area along the narrowest part of the Red Sea that is the most important shipping corridor in the world. It is responsible for 12% of international trade and almost one-third of global container traffic. When the movement of ships is disrupted along this waterway, insurance premiums skyrocket, prices on retail merchandise rise, oil prices go through the roof. That's why Western powers are committed to keeping these shipping lanes open at all times, whatever the cost. Here's some background from CNN. Yemen's Iran-backed Houthis rebels are stepping up their strikes on ships in the Red Sea, which they say are revenge against Israel for its military campaign in Gaza, for the wanton slaughter and genocide they might have emphasized. The attacks have forced some of the world's biggest shipping and oil companies to suspend transit through one of the world's most important maritime trade routes, which could potentially cause a shock to the global economy. The Houthis are believed to have been armed and trained by Iran. Their fears their attacks could escalate Israel's war against Hamas into a wider regional conflict. At present, these shipping lanes are effectively closed due to Houthi attacks on Israeli-bound vessels. This, in turn, has slowed overall traffic to a crawl. If the current situation persists or gets worse, the impact on global economy could be catastrophic. Get this, here's Vanessa Beely today on UK Column News. I will cover the latest on Yemen and how Ansarullah, that's another name for the Houthis, is already winning the war against the U.S.-led global coalition destined for failure in the graveyard of invaders, which is Yemen. Here's the headline. Not a single cargo has arrived in Israel for 2 weeks, and we expect the same for the next 4. Surprisingly, the Houthis don't stand to gain anything from their effort. They're actually putting themselves at great risk for retaliation from the U.S. in order to pressure Israel into stopping its relentless bombardment of the Gaza Strip and allowing the starving Palestinian people access to food, water, and medical supplies. The Houthis should probably be applauded for their selfless compassion and humanity. That's how I feel, but Washington doesn't see it that way. They don't see the Houthis' action as laudable, virtuous, or just. They see it as a challenge to American primacy. They see it as a threat to their regional hegemony and global leadership. They see it as interference in their Gaza policy, in which Israel has been granted carte blanche to kill and maim as many Palestinians as it sees fit, in order to achieve its own strategic objective, which is greater Israel. So what we have is an unstoppable force and an immovable object. We have two opposing points of view and no way to resolve their differences without direct military confrontation. That means there's going to be trouble in the very near future. Here's Jackson Hinkle tweeting, and many Houthis have prepared naval mines for American and Israeli ships. And that's why last Monday, Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin announced he'd assembled a 10-member maritime coalition that would patrol the waterways in the Red Sea and defend the freedom of navigation in that area. Now, a reasonable person might wonder why Austin would cobble together another makeshift military coalition whose strategic goals are far from clear instead of first contacting the Houthi leadership to see if a deal could be worked out and a confrontation avoided. But those who followed U.S. foreign policy for the last 30 years know the U.S. does not negotiate with people or countries it considers its inferiors. So that option was quickly discarded. Instead, the U.S. has decided to pursue its traditional appeal approach to emerging crises, which involves a fair amount of incendiary rhetoric, followed by a military hammer blow. And that appears to be the direction things are now headed. Check this excerpt from an article by John Helmer. On Monday, oil giant BP became the latest company to announce it would be pausing shipments to the Red Sea. Several shipping companies, including MSC, Maersk, Euronav, and Evergreen, have said they are also avoiding the Suez Canal as militants target cargo vessels. Roughly 10% of all maritime oil trade goes to the Red Sea, which connects the Mediterranean with the Suez via the Suez Canal. Without access to the Red Sea route, many ships will have to take far longer and the costlier journey around Africa to reach their destination. I urge the global community to continue to pursue every possible diplomatic effort in support of security in and safe navigation through the region so vital to national trade. It's worth noting the Houthis have repeatedly said ships that are not bound for Israel will not be attacked. But that has not stopped all the major shipping companies from rerouting their vessels from the Red Sea to the Cape of Good Hope. His alternative route adds weeks to the sailing time, forcing carriers to raise their cargo prices and adjust their schedule. Bottom line, the action of the Houthis is going to further boost inflation in Western companies, pushing their economies into a sharp and protracted nosedive. I'm fascinated by this. We also have breaking news. Chinese, Iranian, and Indian warships are now in the Red Sea and the Gulf of Aden. For the time being, no Russian Navy vessels are reported in the Red Sea. The reports indicate the submarine Ufa is headed eastward toward the Mediterranean with a service support vessel and likely to transit the Suez Canal in the Red Sea soon. The new improved Kilo-class Ufa in St. Petersburg is shown here after commissioning in November of 2022. I'm very keen to have your thoughts about this development with the Houthis, Ace, where it seemed to me the Houthis have balls the size of elephants. I admire them beyond words.
Well, I think it's important to look at mind control words when they come up, and there's a lot of them there. Like this, the commenters are worried about a threat to American primacy, and they talk about American ships. And then later on, they're worried about Chinese ships or Indian ships or Iranian ships. And the idea is supposed to implant in my mind, because I'm an American, that if they want to talk about an American ship or American primacy, then this is somehow in my interest. This is somehow my ship. And I have some kind of an interest in seeing that American primacy is not threatened. And that's just simply not the case. You know, if America wins a war, how does that benefit me necessarily? Or if America loses a war, how does that hurt me necessarily? And I think, you know, this really goes to my economics training, and that is to see that it's a world of incentives, right? And there are people who wage war, and people who have the power and the position to wage war, and they're very closely connected to the people who make billions of dollars off of war, and they're the ones who benefit from all of this, whether they call themselves Americans or Chinese or Indians or Iranians or anything else. And but this idea that, you know, that something, anything done in the name of the United States is somehow good for me, is just, I mean, there's just no rational reason to believe in that. Some of the other commentators were worried about what is the cost of all of this, and is it a good investment of U.S. dollars or Western dollars or, you know, the money that we, quote unquote, are spending on doing this stuff. And this is just, it buys into the fundamental lie that a government is something like a business, right? Because private businesses worry about the cost of things. They worry about their bottom line. But it's a completely opposite set of incentives anytime you talk about things that governments do, right? And which waging war is like the number one thing that governments do. And governments are able to socialize the cost of everything while reaping private benefits of things. And anytime you set up a situation where you can make the taxpayer and make me pay for what you're doing, but the benefit of what you're doing flows to the private individuals, or it certainly doesn't flow to me, anytime you can set something like that up, it's just a recipe for evil. Right. And the commentators worried about the impact on the global economy as catastrophic. Well, that is the same point. Right. It's in the interest of the people calling themselves governments to wage war and to cause economic destruction, because they themselves can personally benefit. And to hell with Ace Baker and Jim Fetzer. They could care less. Right. So, you know, it's going to be a boost to inflation, one of the commenters was worried about. Well, look, inflation is caused by the printing of money, and this is made possible only by this the government monopoly on the production of money, right? And and as long as we want to pretend that we don't know this and buy into the lie that inflation is just something that happens naturally in an economy, and that the purpose of government monetary policy is supposed to be to rein in inflation or whatever, all of that is just a lie, right? So if we buy into all of this mind control, then we kind of deserve what we get.
Very nice. Very nice, Ace. We're going to run up against the break, but we'll begin. Top 10 stories of 2023. Number three, Israel losing to Hamas. The Washington Post had published a map of Israel's destruction of Gaza. It's absolutely stunning. The Post mapped out the complete and utter devastation of Gaza by Israel in their relentless, indiscriminate bombing campaign. From the Washington Post, Israel has waged one of this century's most destructive wars in Gaza. It's been unlike any other in the 21st century. In response to the unprecedented assault by Hamas, Israeli airstrikes and a ground invasion that began 20 days later have destroyed large swaths of the besieged territory, killed at least 20,057, and displaced a vast majority of the population. The most ferocious attacks have come from the air, flattening entire city blocks and cratering the landscape. The Washington Post analyzed satellite imagery, airstrike data, and UN damage assessment and interviewed more than 20 aid workers, healthcare providers, and experts in munitions and aerial warfare. The evidence shows Israel has carried out its war in Gaza at a pace and level of devastation that likely exceeds any recent conflict, destroying more buildings in less time than were destroyed during the Syrian regime battle for Aleppo from 2013 to 2016 over a three-year period, or the UN campaign to defeat the Islamic State in Mosul, Iraq, and Raqqa, Syria in 2017.
Take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Hey, everyone. It's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
Ah. Join Revolution Radio every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
This is your host, Jim Fetzer, with my special guest, 8 Baker, continuing our countdown of the top 10 stories of 2023. Number 3, Hamas defeating Israel. Here's Paul Rogers writing, Israel is losing the war against Hamas, but Netanyahu and his government will never admit it. The official narrative has been Hamas is weakened. But in reality, the IDF's doctrine of massive force is failing. Until recently, the war narrative on Gaza had been largely controlled by the IDF and the country's Ministry of Defense. Israel's international reputation may have plummeted with the killing of more than 20,000 Palestinians, the wounding of more than 50,000, and destruction of much of Gaza. But the IDF could still sell a plausible narrative of a severely weakened Hamas, even claiming the war in northern Gaza was largely complete and success in southern Gaza would follow before too long. That narrative was helped by severe difficulties of the few journalists still operating Gaza, including the risk to their personal safety, while the international press corps was stuck in Jerusalem and dependent on IDF sources for much of their information. That changed as a different picture began to emerge. First, there was lack of evidence to support the IDF claim of a Hamas headquarters under the Al-Sharif hospital. And then IDF could identify the location of the Israeli hostages, despite having some of the world's most advanced intelligence. Recently, there have been two further incidents. On 12 December, there was a skillful triple ambush staged by Hamas paramilitaries in a part of Gaza, supposedly controlled by Israeli forces. An IDF unit was ambushed and took casualties. Further troops were sent to aid that unit, and they were ambushed, as were reinforcement. A further indication came a few days later when three Israeli hostages succeeded in getting away from their captors, only to be killed by IDF soldiers, even though shirtless and carrying a white flag. What has since made that worse, and it's causing considerable anger in Israel, is that calls from the hostages were picked up by an audio-equipped IDF search dog 5 days before they were killed. There are other wider indications of the IDF's problems. Official casualty figures have showed more than 460 military personnel killed in Gaza, Israel, and the occupied West Bank, and about 1,900 wounded. But other sources suggest the figure is far greater. 10 days ago, Israel's leading daily, Yedioth Ahronoth, published information obtained from the Ministry of Defense Rehabilitation Department. The head was reported as saying more than 2,000 IDF soldiers had been registered as disabled, with 58% of all those it had treated suffering from severe injuries to their hands and feet, suggesting a far higher casualty toll than the official figure. Meanwhile, the Times of Israel reported the number of injured IDF soldiers, Israeli police, and other security forces as 6,125. There's also been a number of friendly fire casualties, the same paper reporting 20 out of 105 deaths due to such fire or accidents during the fighting. The effect is that the IDF commanders are coming under huge pressure to succeed and will go as far as the war cabinet will allow. Many are highly intelligent, if invariably single-minded, and will now know that for all of Netanyahu's rhetoric, Hamas, or at least Hamas's ideas, cannot be defeated by military force. They also know that while talks are stalling, Pressure from the families of hostages may soon result in another humanitarian pause. Therefore, their aim will be to damage Hamas as much as they can, as quickly as they can, while they can, whatever the cost to Palestinians. For evidence, witness this week's intense air raids. What makes this possible is Netanyahu's dependence on an extremist minority of religious fundamentalists and trenchant Zionists in his government. They would not have anything like the wider support in Israel, not for the tragedy of 7 October. Yet they're doing more and more harm to Israel's long-term security. Not only does Israel risk becoming a pariah state, even among its allies, but will also fuel a generation of radical opposition from a reconstituted Hamas or its inevitable successor. It needs saving from itself. But that will depend more than anything on Joe Biden and the people around him. Perhaps pushed on by the rapidly changing public mood in Western Europe, they must recognize their role in bringing an immediate end to this conflict. Meanwhile, Ehud Olmert, who along with Bibi Netanyahu I have identified as the brain trust behind 9/11, which was designed to create a pretext for getting American military involved in the Middle East to take out the modern Arab states that served as a counterbalance to Israel's domination of the entire region, has even declared elimination of Hamas will not be achieved. Netanyahu is waging a personal war. Former Israeli PM Ehud Olmert commented on the goal of the war on Gaza to destroy the Hamas movement will not be achieved, stressing that PM Netanyahu's pledges are boastful and he's fighting a war for his personal gain. Olmert wrote in Haaretz, Gaza is crashing. Thousands of citizens are sadly paying with their lives. Thousands of Hamas fighters happily are being killed, but the destruction of Hamas will not be achieved. Whether Sinwar's founder enjoys a short life in hiding until he, Mohammed Deif, and their partners in Hamas leadership are eliminated, Hamas will continue as a very weak, battered, bleeding force, but it will continue to exist on the edge of Gaza. Given that this is a true assessment of the situation, we must prepare for a change of direction. I know this may be unpopular. In the atmosphere of incitement, bravado, and arrogance characterizing the conduct of this government and its head, one must not shy away from saying things that are not obvious but are necessary out of a sense of national responsibility. He added, the state of Israel now faces a choice between a ceasefire as part of a deal that may bring home the hostages in the hope most are still alive, and a ceasefire with no deal, no hostages, no apparent achievement, with a total loss of the remnants of international public support for the state of Israel's right to exist without terror threats from murder organizations. There is more to it, but Ace, what do you think about these developments vis-a-vis Hamas and Olmert's critique of Netanyahu's conduct? You're muted.
Sorry about that. Again, I'm sort of just mystified and confused with the meaning of some of these just political terms, you know, like Israel's reputation. Well, I mean, what does that even mean, right? I guess we're supposed to pretend that Israel is a person, right? Because a person can have a good reputation or a bad reputation and can be concerned about their reputation. But I'm at a loss to even understand what it's supposed to mean when we worry about Israel's reputation, right? Or Israel becoming a pariah state. You know, I suppose that the worry is that maybe Israel will be subjected to sanctions. I mean, the United States has certainly issued sanctions against all kinds of different peoples many, many times in history for all sorts of reasons. But people generally don't stop and ask what's really going on and who is really hurt by sanctions or some nation becoming an international pariah and who benefits, right? And I think the starting question might be, why is there war? Why do wars happen in the first place. I mean, war is a crime against humanity. And when you're trying to solve any crime, the first question to ask is cui bono? Who benefits? Who benefits from war? And the answer is the rulers do. And you can look not only at rich nations like Israel or the United States or Western Europe, but also at tiny little poor nations anywhere in the world. And you will find that the rulers, the people who have positioned themselves into the into being the ruling class in that place, are fabulously wealthy. And that's the point as far as they're concerned, right? So, but in order to justify this position of being the ruler of wherever it is, they have to continually reinvent an enemy and continually reinvent some justification for going to war, whether it's an actual hot war like you've been talking about today, or the war on drugs, or the war on COVID, or the war on whatever. You keep inventing an enemy, and you have to keep fighting it. And of course, you have to keep extracting wealth from the people by whatever means, by inflation, by taxation, or whatever it is, in order to benefit yourself. And the rulers of this planet are unbelievably, obscenely wealthy on the backs of me and you. And it's just time to stop believing that it's okay. That's the only solution to war, is to stop believing that these people, these individual flesh and blood human beings like Netanyahu, like Biden, like any of these other people who claim to be in the ruling class, they're just people, and they have no more right to do this shit than you or I do. And it's just time to stop.
I so much agree, and let me throw in story number four, Israel committing massive war crimes. Israel is pumping seawater into the Gaza tunnels despite warnings from Russia about war crimes. It's going to contaminate the fresh water, make it uninhabitable perhaps for centuries. IDF has not officially announced that plan, stating it's an ongoing operation. U.S. officials reported the tunnel flooding operation will take weeks, having begun about the time when Israel added two more pumps to the five already installed. Following a round of tests, Israel began flooding the tunnels as promised. The plan is for Israel to completely take over the Gaza Strip and absorb the land as its own. Doing this requires many deaths, apparently, as well as the prospect of the possible loss of around 137 Israeli and foreign hostages who remain in Hamas captivity. Last week's temporary ceasefire and prisoner swap has expired. We're now back in the saddle of ridding Gaza of all Palestinians to make way for the much-anticipated Ben-Gurion Canal, as well as Israel's planned exploitation of the vast oil and natural gas reserves located off to the coast of Gaza in the Mediterranean. It believed many of the remaining 137 hostages are being held somewhere in the vast underground tunnel system that Israel is now flooding. All their lives are at risk because of this endeavor. So far, Israel says it's identified at least 800 tunnels, but believes the full scope of the underground network is much, much larger. We're not sure how successful pumping will be, since no one knows the details of the tunnels and the ground around them. It's impossible to know if it'll be effective because we don't know how seawater will drain in tunnels no one's been in before. Kuga tweets, just a photo of Hamas senior officials in the Northern Brigade of the Gaza Strip having gathered in a tunnel. Notice the lights, the sofa, the marble-like floors, and the fan. This photo was located during the fighting. Five commanders' photographs were eliminated. I'm not sure that's true. Meanwhile, antiwar.com reports, Human Rights Watch says Israel is using starvation as a weapon of war. They said the Israeli forces are deliberately blocking the delivery of water, food, and fuel, while willfully impeding humanitarian assistance, apparently raising agricultural areas, depriving the civilian population of objects indispensable to their survival. For over 2 months, Israel has been depriving Gaza's population of food and water, a policy spurred on or endorsed by high-ranking Israeli officials, reflecting an intent to starve civilians as a method of warfare. World leaders should be speaking out against this abhorrent war crime, which has devastating effect on Gaza's population. Over and beyond that, shocking new evidence points to Israel using uranium and neutron bombs in Gaza. There's been a lot of speculation over the years surrounding the type of nuclear capabilities and arsenal possessed by Israel. One expert says it's clear Israel has already been using a type of uranium radiation weapon. The evidence is simple yet powerful. Enriched uranium being found in environmental samples in the Middle East, especially in Gaza, where its presence is rising, something that does not occur by nature. This is according to the research of Christopher Busby, a top nuclear physicist in Europe, longtime researchers of the biochemical damage caused by the long-range dispersal of depleted uranium weapons. Busby, who was a member of the UK Ministry of Defense Depleted Uranium Oversight Board, published his findings through the consultancy Green Audit. His newest research paper explains how different measurements using a variety of techniques have found enriched uranium in samples taken from air, soil, bomb craters, and other sources in Gaza. It, supported by a study published in Nature in 2021, showed the levels of uranium enrichment in samples from Gaza had been rising significantly since 2008. Green Audit reports it was contacted by a Lebanese physicist concerned about gamma radiation measurements. He took it a weapon crater in Qayyum, Lebanon, after Israel bombed the area in 2006. He found a 20-fold excess in gamma radiation in the crater compared to background. After analyzing samples taken from the crater, as well as an ambulance from Beirut, where large bombs were dropped, they found evidence of enriched uranium. The UN at the time, however, insisted it was in natural ratios. Doctors in Gaza reached out in 2009 to express their concern on unexplained weapon effects. They observed in people of all ages, including children, who'd been exposed to the flash of Israeli missiles and bombs. Busby attempted to go to Egypt to obtain samples, but was refused permission. However, they were able to test samples smuggled out of Gaza, finding the presence of enriched uranium. Well, they compared samples from Gaza sand, oil, and recycled building material, as well as sand from Sinai. All the samples from Gaza had rich uranium, while the sand from Sinai did not. Thus, the Sinai, not being part of Gaza, can be thought of as a control. The results were measured using gamma spectrometry, which has greater accuracy than other methods, reporting the enriched uranium levels were far higher than those found in samples during the 2008 bombing. The others believe Israel's using a weapon containing U-238 that produces U-235 as part of nuclear explosions. These weapons are considered neutron bombs because they produce neutrons. The report's conclusions, if they are correct, and Israel is using weapons of this variety, it's bad news for everyone in Gaza, as the health effects are devastating. If these weapons are exposing people to uranium aerosol particles and neutrons, it can cause immediate effects, such as vaporized human limbs and severe burns. We already know reports of unusual flash burns on casualties in Gaza. These weapons also have genetic effects, and there have been reports of excess birth defects in Gaza. The authors also note neutron weapons and uranium particulate aerosols are ideal choices for armies dealing with targets that hide in urban environments as they pass through walls, exactly what Israel is dealing with in Gaza right now. While their genetic effects mean they are effective in aiding genocide. Here we have Scott Ritter, by the way, giving an assessment.
Well, if you won't say it, I will. Hamas is winning this war. They're winning it tactically. They're winning it operationally. They're winning it strategically. The whole Hamas plan was to get Israel to do everything they've done, to get Israel to bomb the infrastructure, to collapse buildings into rubble, to create this massive chaos above ground. and to lure Israel into this where Hamas operates below ground. I've been looking at some of the same videos. It's curious, you know, I would have thought that Hamas, you know, when they build their tunnels to defend, that the tunnels would have gone right up to the surface and that there would have been some sort of boulder or bush disguising the tunnel entrance. And then I'm thinking, well, wait a minute, Scott, you're smarter than this. I took ground penetrating radar into Iraq to look for buried things. And when you have that kind of a surface anomaly, you pick it up. So I'm looking at the videos. It appears that Hamas's tunnels end around 8 to 10 meters below ground. And that in order to do their attack, they are breaching their tunnel and then collapsing that soil in, and then they're climbing up. It's because there's this big lip, this big soil lip that they have to come up. They put a ladder up and they work their way up. What does that mean? That means when, you know, Israel is coming through with their, you know, radar, their side scanning radar, their ground penetrating radar, looking for these tunnel networks, they ain't detecting that because that radar can't go down that deep. Which means Israel has no clue where these tunnels are. And this is why you can have Israel actually build a camp where the bulldozer comes out and bulldozes up this little berm area. And then you have the Israelis in there smoking dope, smoking cigarettes, doing whatever they're doing, grab assing. And all of a sudden, in the middle of this, pop, there's a tunnel opens up and out pops Hamas. And they kill a bunch of Israelis and they go back down and then they seal off that tunnel. They blow it up, collapse it, and Ukraine and the Israelis can't follow it in. This is a very, very coordinated defense. They fought the Israelis to a standstill in many areas. Israel's had to withdraw from certain areas of northern Gaza. Remember before the pause, the operational pause, Israel, we've defeated Hamas in the north. Not even close, pal. Not even close. The battle hasn't even begun. Israel has to have to withdraw from certain areas. Areas they deem to be secure are suddenly their tanks are getting popped, their guys are getting killed. And it's not a whole bunch of dead guys. I mean, over 100 soldiers have been killed. It turns out, you know, around 20% of those are killed by Israelis, a friendly fire instance, which again points to the chaos of the fighting and the lack of discipline on the part of the Israelis. These aren't good soldiers. They're not good soldiers. You know they're not good because they're ill-disciplined. These are idiots that broadcast a video to his daughter, you know, hey, baby, happy birthday. I'm blowing up something. Boom. And they do that video. And Hamas is watching and going, kill him. And they did. You got Golani Brigade guys burning schools. Hey, we're burning schools. We're burning stuff. And Hamas said, kill them. And they did. Hamas is in control of this battlefield. It doesn't mean that they're going to push Israel out. That was never the objective. The objective was to pull them in and then hold them, grab them, kill them, grind them down. 5,000 Israeli wounded. That's the number you should focus on. And of that, 2,000 are permanently disabled. That means they'll never recover. That's a number. 5,000 casualties that Israel has suffered. And they aren't winning. They're losing. The military is almost in a panic. Meanwhile,
Ace, I think that what Scott Ritter is reporting is why Israel is committing these grotesque war crimes. Your thoughts?
Well, the term war crimes has always been a very curious concept to me. I mean, war crime seems redundant, right? It's like a shark fish or something, right? I mean, I guess there's some definition somewhere where, you know, this sort of tactic is okay in war, but this other kind of weapon or tactic is not okay. And we're going to call that a war crime, of course. So, you know, what are we going to do about it? I mean, we don't have to look hard to find examples, right? The Allied forces used firebombing on, you know, innocent civilians, women and children during World War II. Hundreds of thousands of German civilians were killed and burned alive. You know, was that a war crime? I guess so. But so what? Right. So if we're going to worry about this distinction between, you know, legitimate war and and bad war or something, I really think we're missing the point, right? Enriched uranium is bad, but conventional bombing is okay, right? The health effects are devastating from this radiation. Well, sure it is, but I mean, the health effects from just getting hit by a bomb are pretty devastating, right? So I think investing energy in worrying about war crimes kind of misses the point.
Fascinating, fascinating, Ace. Let me see what else we got here. To wit, top 10 stories of 2003, number 5, anti-Semitism failing. The anti-Semitism hoax has officially collapsed. Jews don't know it yet, but it's over, Andrew Anglin writes. Marsha Blackburn tweets, anti-Semitism will not be tolerated in the United States. No college or university that allows these heinous acts of anti-Semitism on their campus should receive a single dime from the federal government. These claims of anti-Semitism are protests against the genocide against the Palestinian people. What could be more legitimate? The transformation has happened so fast, I don't think people have yet grasped it. The official definition of anti-Semitism before October 7th was hating Jews for no reason. The post-710 definition is saying Jews should stop killing babies. It's a really massive transformation. I know most non-Jews don't understand it, but what's even crazier is most Jews don't appear to understand it. Jews have a psychosis where they view any criticism of their behavior of hate. I'm supposed to be the world's top anti-Semite, but all I ever did was criticize their behavior. However, Jews had some degree of plausible deniability with regard to their agenda to push homosexuality on children or to flood white countries with poor, illiterate non-whites. They could also claim those things were good. Now, in the context of we slaughter children, we'll be right back with Ace Baker.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
If you think for 1 second that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourselves. Because we know who they are and what they do. This is what they do, and we must fight back. You can torture us and bomb us. Fire is catching. And if we burn, you burn with us.
Good evening.
Are you awake yet? I hope. We've tried and we've tried for years and years to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. The time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence at the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming, and it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet, not giving up. Revolution Radio.
It is no secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Continuing with top story number 5 of 2023, the anti-Semitism hoax has collapsed. People hate us for no reason because we murder children is simply not a viable PR strategy. Even the New York Post reports, Jewish students have filed a federal civil rights lawsuit accusing the University of California of allowing the long-standing unchecked spread of anti-Semitism. The lawsuit claims Jew hatred has boiled over following the terror group Hamas sneak attack of October 7th, even signed a statement from Cal Berkeley's own law school dean, Erwin Chemerinsky. The whole thing is now coming unraveled. Since October 7th, anti-Semitism has run rampant in the school, the complaint said, citing numerous incidents of intimidation, harassment, and physical violence against Jewish students. And look, here we have a photograph at Berkeley. We will not anti-Semite me into complacency with genocide. Meanwhile, the ADL has admitted that Israel has lost the young. Here's a sign on a street, Israel's killing children again. Enjoy your weekend. And the House, alas, has passed a bill saying anti-Zionism is anti-Semitism, which is a linguistic absurdity. Only 13 Democrats and one Republican voted no. 92 other Democrats voted present. The resolution saying anti-Zionism is anti-Semitism conflates criticism of Israel with anti-Semitism. The resolution presented as a condemnation of anti-Semitism passed on a vote of 314-14, 92, only 13 Democrats and one Republican voting against. It declares the House of Representatives clearly and firmly states anti-Zionism is anti-Semitism. Jerry Nadler, the most senior Jewish member of the House, criticized the language of the bill ahead of the vote. The resolution suggests that all anti-Zionism is anti-Semitism. That is either intellectually disingenuous or just factually wrong. and it unfairly implicates many of my Orthodox former constituents in Brooklyn, many of whose families arose from the ashes of the Holocaust. He claimed most anti-Zionism is anti-Semitism that added, if the authors were at all familiar with Jewish history and culture, they should know about Jewish anti-Semitism that was and is expressly not anti-Semitic. This resolution ignores the fact that even today, certain Orthodox Hasidic Jewish communities, the Satmars in New York and others, as well as adherents of the pre-state Jewish labor movement, have held views that are at odds with the modern Zionist conception. Representative Thomas Massey was the only Republican to vote against the bill, just as last week he was the lone member to vote against a resolution claiming denying Israel's right to exist as a form of anti-Semitism. Explain his opposition, Massey said the resolution also equated anti-Zionism with anti-Semitism, though not as explicitly as this new bill. Your thoughts, Ace?
Right, yeah. This term anti-Semitism, I think it might have been Joseph Sobran who maybe 30 or more years ago said, and anti-Semite is not somebody that hates Jews. An anti-Semite is someone that Jews hate. And I think that really kind of captures an important truth about anti-Semitism. Look, it's long been a trick that the Jewish elite use when they want to disgrace someone. They label them an anti-Semite. And if you really want to really get into like this whole technique, this propaganda technique that goes by the name of labeling people anti-Semites. And by the way, I have made it to the ADL's list. I'm officially on there as being anti-Semitic. So that too happened in 2023. If you really want to understand the whole history of this anti-Semite meme, you have to go back to the case of Leo Frank, which if you don't know, I know you know, but some of your listeners maybe. Leo Frank was a very prominent Jewish person in Atlanta, Georgia, back in the beginning of the 20th century. He owned or managed a big pencil factory, but he was also the head of the local chapter of the B'nai B'rith. And he raped and murdered a young worker at his factory named Mary Fagan, who was 13 years old at the time. Leo Frank was like in his late 20s and married. And there was a very, very famous trial. And long story short, he got a fair trial. He got fair appeals. And there's no question for anybody that wants to look into it that Leo Frank was guilty of murdering this young girl. But right at that time, they formed the ADL. This is the birth of the ADL, was specifically formed to try to do something about the fact that Leo Frank had been convicted of murder and sentenced to death. And they were successfully able to, after a whole series of appeals and a bunch of stuff, they were able to get Leo Frank's sentence commuted down to life in prison. And then what happened was a vigilante group somehow broke into the prison, kidnapped him, and lynched Leo Frank. But to this day, they did not stop there. And if you go and look on Wikipedia or any other mainstream source, you will be told that that the conviction of Leo Frank was just anti-Semitic, and that actually this other guy, a black guy that worked at the factory, was the real murderer. And if you look into the details, this could not possibly be true. Leo Frank was absolutely guilty, but the power that this Jewish influence, and like through the ADL and lots of other groups, the influence that they still have to this day to just rewrite history, it's just nothing less than astonishing. You can also look at, there's this academic named Deborah Lipstadt, who had a very famous court case against the Holocaust revisionist David Irving. And of course, she was victorious, no surprise there. And she has given speeches where she has said that if you try to question the Holocaust, or that you do anything else that gets you labeled as an anti-Semite, we must make you a pariah. And this technique is very much in force. It is interesting what's going on now. It'll be interesting to see how it plays out, because now there are, for the first time, I think, there is some kind of a backlash against this, just automatically labeling anybody who is against the Zionist agenda as being somehow just this irrational Jew hater. So we'll see how it plays out.
Yeah, as Voltaire observed, to know who rules over you, just discover who you're not allowed to criticize. And of course, it's
I wanted to mention that, because so that quote, you know, if you want to know who rules you, find out who you're not allowed to criticize, has long been attributed to Voltaire, but they have attacked even that. And now they say, no, actually, Voltaire never said that. And they're now attributing that quote to, I believe it's who's the guy, Alfred Strom or whatever, a revisionist historian guy, and a white supremacist guy. And they're saying, no, he's the one that actually said that. I don't care. It's a very important thing to understand. I think it's very important.
Absolutely right. Now, to play catch up, I'm going to combine three different stories here. Number top 10 stories of 2023, number 6, border catastrophe continues. Biden's wide open border, record 50 million immigrants now in the United States. Foreign-born citizens in America have reached up to 50 million, primarily spiked by Joe Biden's wide open border. More simply, almost 15% of the U.S. population is now foreign-born. The surge came during the Mexican border crisis under Biden's liberal policies, according to the U.S. Census Bureau. The number is likely much higher because a current population survey of foreign-born residents does not account, actually, for those who escape border patrol. More than half, 2.5 million of the 4.5 million increase in the foreign-born population since January 2021 is likely due to illegal immigration. Here you can see stunning records of how it's happened. Absolutely shocking. So a significant portion of the foreign-born growth is due to illegal immigration. Legal immigrants account for 3/4 of the immigrant population. The number of immigrants crossing into the U.S. is going to continue to spike under Biden. If present trends are allowed to continue, the total number of immigrants would reach 58.9 million, 17.3% of the total population by the end of a second Biden term. These numbers and percentages are all new highs. Meanwhile, the migrant crisis has U.S. taxpayers on the hook for up to $451 billion. Every day, millions of taxpayer dollars spent on costs directly associated with illegal immigration in the United States. Only a small fraction is ever recouped from the taxes paid by illegal aliens, with the rest on the shoulder of the American citizens. It's absolutely outrageous what has been taken place. Meanwhile, and that's contributed to our number 7 story of the top 10 at 2023, fake Biden losing. The U.S. may be flouting its own laws by sending unrestricted aid to Israel. Biden admin officials said they're not currently considering placing conditions on aid beyond those that already exist in federal law, but they expect Israel to abide by international humanitarian law, and that the Israeli Defense Forces conducts internal legal reviews of its strike beforehand, which is just absurd. The Israelis don't give a damn about international law or the Hague Convention or the Geneva Conventions. Those are merely man's law. They are following a higher law, God's law, which designates that the chosen people are entitled to the promised land and can slaughter any who stand in its way. Some foreign policy experts say those legal conditions aren't being adequately enforced against Israel, given the high death toll. They argue the U.S. may be shrinking its legal duty to ensure that assistance to Israel is not being used to violate human rights, where we have policy to prevent arm transfers that enable violations of humanitarian law or to use American weapons to harm civilians. I think it would be very significant if the admin were to finally make clear our aid is not unconditional. It would send a policy, a message politically, we're not willing to tolerate this kind of egregious behavior. Meanwhile, the head of the new Speaker of the House related further aid to Ukraine or to Israel or to Taiwan with doing something about the border. This was a brilliant stroke. Thus, the Senate is returning next week to work on a border deal, but the House Speaker adjourned his chamber for the holidays, which means even if the Senate were to work a deal, the bill could not be finalized until after the new year, meaning they're without. Meanwhile, we have all kinds of evidence that the guy in the White House is not the real Joe Biden. I've repeatedly explained this. They know they have different earlobes. They have different signatures. They have different shapes and size of face. It's outrageous. Everyone in Washington has to know the truth. It appears the real guy died in 2017, and ever since, we've been dealing with an imposter. Here's top story number 8. The U.S. is losing. The General Assembly just rebuked U.S. hegemony. The significance of the December 12th U.N. General Assembly vote goes well beyond the demand for an immediate humanitarian ceasefire in Gaza. Planners have long believed the U.S. can lead the world most legitimately and effectively through international bodies like the U.N. The context, however, is significant. On December 8th, U.N. Secretary General Antonio Guterres invoked Article 99 to demand the attention of the Security Council to protect international peace and security. 15 members voted for an immediate humanitarian ceasefire. 13 voted in favor, with one abstention, the U.K., and a single veto by the United States. In response to the American veto, the General Assembly invoked the seldom-used Resolution 377A. It was a response to what was perceived as the U.S. irresponsible use as its veto power. The U.S. vetoed the call of most of the rest of the Security Council, but the General Assembly, representing the world, and not just the archaically ensconced permanent members of the Security Council, had recourse. Article 377A reminds the 5 permanent Security Council members that, in the exercise of their primary responsibility to maintain international peace and security, it is their duty to seek unanimity and exercise restraint in the exercise of the veto. Here they have put the interest of Israel ahead of those of the United States. Meanwhile, the Russian aerospace forces have struck a NATO operational center with a Kansai hypersonic missile. This is a NATO operation center. We also have Russia's foreign minister, Sergei Lavrov, warning that the West, that its 500-year domination of the world is coming to an end. New Delhi. Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov warned the West its 500-year domination of the world is coming to an end. Lavrov said the conflict has made Russia stronger, even though West has sought to weaken Russia and Ukraine. He compared it to how Russia became stronger after defeating Hitler and Napoleon in the past. Lavrov said the hybrid war in Ukraine is based on cancel culture, that it's up to the Ukrainian to recognize how deep they are in the hole where the American put them. Again, we have another report. Ukraine, another historic U.S. war failure, all of Vietnam, Iraq, Afghanistan, and more. This is absolutely right. The whole sordid charade of Ukraine continuing to win is only postponing the reality that proxy war in Ukraine against Russia is a debacle for the Western powers. This is not something to gloat over. It is a tragedy and an abomination. Washington and its NATO allies cannot admit the odious, incriminating reality. The military alliance is approaching its 75th anniversary since its founding in 1949. There is thus huge pressure to try to make the Ukraine conflict look like some kind of victory to protect the fragile memory of the obsolete alliance and the political reputation of the incompetent Western leaders. Here, top 10 stories, number 9. We'll hold off on that while we go to your comments, Ace, about those I've just reported.
Well, yeah, a lot of people are worried about illegal immigration. This is just another example of where freedom actually solves the problem, right? The only reason we have a problem with illegal immigration is because we seem to have accepted the idea that there's going to be this ruling class, these people calling themselves the government, and they get to decide who gets to come in and who doesn't get to come in to this huge geographic land area. And this obviously takes the idea of private ownership of land and just abolishes it, right? So a better idea is that land is privately owned, and then simply the owner of the land decides who gets to come onto that property and who doesn't. And what you overwhelmingly, the result is that people spontaneously tend to group themselves together based on other people being most similar to themselves. People overwhelmingly, when left relatively free, will group themselves along lines of language and of culture and race. And that's just natural. I mean, you can observe this in the immigration patterns, even in the United States, used to this day. If you go to Los Angeles, which is the most like integrated, racially diverse city probably on planet Earth, you still have huge areas where it's nothing but Korean people in this area and nothing but Mexican people over in that area and nothing but Orthodox Jews over in the Fairfax district and on and on and on. And so like anything else, you want to ask who's behind this? Who benefits from the obvious promotion of multiculturalism and mass immigration and the forced integration of all different people from all over the world? And you can just look no further than the basic tenets of communism, right? Whereas Nazism was national socialism, the Soviet theory was international socialism. And it was, and which was absolutely a Jewish movement. The Jews were absolutely behind the Marxist Bolshevik revolution, and promoting the idea of multiculturalism was a central component of that. Because, of course, even by the beginning of the 20th century, the Jewish people had a long, long history of being kicked out of many, many different countries over and over again for the same sorts of reasons. And so it became very important to promote the idea that we all need to get along. And so we're going to bring in lots of other people from all over the world. And that way the Jews won't stick out as being like so different. I mean, yeah, they're different, but so are these people, and so are these other groups of people. And again, it's just freedom. The answer is just freedom. So much of this seems so mind-boggling, so complicated, but when you just sort of let all of that go for a second and focus on what is the difference between right and wrong, if you just focus on that and say, okay, you know, what's the difference between right and wrong? And is it ever okay to initiate force against somebody else? And if you answer that question, as I do, as a voluntarist, and say, no, it's never okay to initiate force or fraud against the person or property of another, then all of this belief in the ruling class and worrying about mass immigration or illegal immigration and war and all of these other things suddenly become crystal clear to you. And that is just, and what you can do personally, by the way, is just disobey. So once you understand that they don't have the right to tell you what to do, what then you have the right to disobey. Now, I know you and I, Jim, both have, you know, run into difficulties in this wonderful legal system of ours, right? So you do have to be very, very careful and with your eyes wide open in terms of civil disobedience that you might want to engage in. But I do recommend it. I am engaging in civil disobedience myself. And if anybody wants to catch up with me, let me please plug my stuff here for a minute. My name is Alexander C. Ace Baker, J.D. I am a Juris Doctorate. That means I'm an expert in the law, that does not actually even exist. But I talk about a lot of these issues, legal issues, from the Supreme Court all the way down to family court on my podcast, which is called Freedom Enough. And it's on Speak Free Radio on Sundays at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. on the West Coast. And I also upload the video versions of that to my Rumble channel. And you can visit my website of my nonprofit organization, which is called the Postmodern Justice Media Project. We've been publicizing court corruption since 2020. That's what we do over there. And that's at pmjmp.org. So hopefully some of your listeners will hear that. Drop me a note and see what's going on in my world.
I'm glad you worked that in, Ace, but because the stories are so important, your comments are so excellent, I'm going to finesse the call-in period today. We're going to keep moving forward on the top 10 stories. Even though Ukraine is lost, Israel is losing, Biden is in deep trouble, and the United States is in desperate straits. Donald Trump is winning.
Like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Revolution Radio, every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job, that Osama had nothing to do with it? That the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes? That Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building? Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in Lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons, and the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Continuing our countdown of the top 10 stories of 2023 with number 9, Trump is winning. Paul Craig Roberts has given a masterful overview of the political situation right here in the United States. American politics is in crisis. The evidence is overwhelming that Biden was not elected but was put into the presidency via a stolen election. And the evidence is overwhelming that Democrats in the Biden regime are attempting to prevent Trump from being returned to the presidency by trying to destroy him with 4 false felony trials and several civil lawsuits. This is an unprecedented weaponization of law for political purposes akin to Stalin's purge trials of the Bolsheviks. The ultimate consequence is unclear. However, the people are not fooled. Trump remains a leading candidate for the presidency. Trump received more votes on his reelection than he did when he was elected to his first term. Biden, whose support was so weak he did not even campaign because the absence of people at his rallies was an embarrassment, was credited with more votes than any Democrat candidate in history, 10 million more than Obama, more than Hillary. The Biden vote total indicated a high level of voter support of which no sign was seen. There was no visible enthusiasm for Biden, yet he had an unprecedented vote total. So we have in the Biden regime an illegitimate government. It is not permissible to say so. The media do not permit it. Lawsuits, even arrest warrants, are brought against people who say or provide evidence that the election was stolen in this way. Those who stole the election use their control over law and prosecution to protect their theft. It was not limited to the presidency. It happened also to Republican representatives, senators, and governors. Trump has had 8 years of false prosecution, Russiagate, 2 illegitimate impeachment attempts, DocumentGate, Strippergate, January 6th insurrection, resulting in his indictment by Democrat-controlled legal machinery in New York, Fulton County, Georgia, in the U.S. Department of Justice. Democrat state attorneys general in New York is attempting to steal Trump's real estate empire. Other Democrat judges have ruled Trump can be sued by anyone who claims to have been damaged by a Trump speech. Trump has all this trouble and stress for 2 reasons alone. He threatened the powerful military security complex by threatening to take away their enemy by normalizing relations with Russia. And he threatened the ruling establishment, sometimes referred to as the deep state, by declaring his intent to take power from them and give it back to the American people. The purpose of this punishment of Trump is to send loud and clear the message Any future president or presidential candidate who threatens in any way the ruling establishment will be destroyed. It's necessary to understand that what's been occurring for decades in the U.S., indeed throughout Western civilization, is erosion of the belief system that's a basis for the social, political, and moral order. The West has been destroyed, not by communist spies or terrorists, but by its own intellectuals and educators, filmmakers, historians. University education and now primary education explain Western civilization as a racist entity that exploits people of color. This has now devolved into the demonization of white people, especially white male heterosexual Gentiles. They're being eliminated from position of power and influence and replaced with women, people of color, and the sexually perverse. Major corporations such as Apple, Starbucks, IBM, even the U.S. military have publicly announced that hirings and promotions for white males are on hold. This is a violation of the Civil Rights Act and the 14th Amendment, but nothing is done about it. In jurisdictions where Democrats control school boards, critical race theory is used to teach white kids their parents are racist who owe restitution to blacks. They're taught they might have been born in the wrong body. Transgender clinics have sprung up in which young women's breasts are removed and young men are chemically castrated. Parents attempt to interfere with the brainwashing of their children are being resisted. It's necessary to understand that Congress and the president are not accountable to the voters. More important than vote is campaign contributions. The House and Senate and President are elected on the basis of large sum of money from rich and powerful financial and economic interests, such as the military security complex, Wall Street, pharmaceutical, energy, agribusiness, and other industries. Elected officials have to comply with the interests of those who can provide the money, or next election, the money goes to their opponents. The Jewish billionaire George Soros uses his money to put into office aggressively partisan Democrat state attorneys general who target Republicans. It's necessary to understand the U.S. is not a nation. It is a Tower of Babel. Untold millions of immigrant invaders enter the country illegally every year, year after year. Nothing can be done to stop the invasion. The Democrats welcome the invaders as they have ways to add them to Democrat votes. The Republican businessmen welcome the invaders. They provide cheap labor and hold down U.S. wages. The two political parties serving short-term interests are destroying America. The immigrant invaders overwhelm school system, medical facility, police, and support systems of affected states and localities, making it difficult for them to service the interests of their municipal bonds. So you see, it matters not how many votes this or that poll shows this or that candidate has. Trump is being prosecuted by Democrat prosecutors in courts, presided over by Democrat judges in jurisdictions where there are black Democrat juries. Law is being used as a weapon to remove a president and presidential candidate perceived by the establishment to be a threat. Trump will not be permitted to be president. If he is not imprisoned, he will be assassinated unless the establishment thinks it can control Trump by controlling his appointments and continuing to harass him. Perhaps the establishment thinks that 8 years of high stress on an elderly man has done its damage and a little more stress will finish Trump off. Meanwhile, Trump dominance hits a new level as he nears 70% support in the GOP primary. The Republican is a clear favorite among GOP voters, with his support having grown a whopping 26 points since February. Fewer than one-third of Republican primaries are backing all of Trump's rivals combined. 12% going to DeSantis, 5% Nikki Haley and Vivek Ramaswamy, 2% for Chris Christie, 1% former Arkansas Governor Asa Hutchinson. Every Trump supporter beside Hutchinson has lost support within the last month. Trump is also doing well in a hypothetical matchup against Biden, beating him by 4 points. That figure is consistent with other national polls. in the head-to-head match against Trump, a survey revealed 5% of Biden's 2020 voters would defect to the Republicans. Meanwhile, Ronald Reagan's AG admits Meese, Jack Smith appointment was illegal. Fascinating development. According to Meese, Democrat President Biden's Attorney General Merrick Garland was not authorized by law to appoint a private citizen like Smith with the sweeping prosecutorial power he's been given. As such, his current petition to the Supreme Court to fast-track Trump's January 6th immunity claim should be ignored. The amicus brief, 30 pages, includes key point. First, all federal officials not listed in the Constitution must be created by Congress, and Congress has not created any position like the one Smith currently holds. He's emphasized Smith is a private citizen, but he's been given the power of a full-fledged U.S. attorney. The law does permit special counsel in some limited roles as assistants, but not with the sweeping authority Smith has received, which is equal to or even exceeds that of a Senate-confirmed U.S. attorney. A position similar to Smith's, called an independent counsel, previously existed, but its authorization expired in 1999. Even if Smith's position were lawful, he was not lawfully appointed. Please note, Smith does not answer to Garland. Garland specifically said to instill confidence that he was independent, that he was not subordinate. As such, Smith counts as a superior officer. He's prosecuting a former president, first time that's happened in our nation's history. He's purporting to exercise at least as much power as a U.S. attorney, probably more. That's the hallmark of a superior officer who must be appointed as such. He must be nominated by the president, confirmed by the Senate, to lawfully hold his position. He likened Smith to the proverbial emperor with no clothes. Not clothes in the authority of the federal government, Smith is a modern example of the naked emperor. Improperly appointed, he has no more authority to represent the United States in court than Bryce Harper, Taylor Swift, or Jeff Bezos. That fact is sufficient to sink Smith's petition, and the court should deny review. Meanwhile, a former State Department official warns of a color revolution plot to shut down the 2024 election. Mike Benz tweets, while the Election Integrity Partnership is censoring millions of pro-Trump tweets ahead of the 2024 election, a team of high-level D.C. operatives in the Transition Integrity Project were plotting a color revolution if Trump won fair and square. Mike Benz has explained that if Trump had refused to step down from office, Black Lives Matter was going to be used to cause havoc in the streets of America. It was facilitated by D.C. operatives, including Donna Brazile, former head of the DNC, and Michael Steele, former head of the RNC. TIP designed a simulation plan to force Trump out of office in June of 2020. Podesta played the role of Biden, and a Republican, the role of Trump, Rosa Brooks, led the TIB exercise. She served in the CIA, was an official within the Pentagon. She now teaches courses in Georgetown on how to overthrow government. Part of the plan was for Western states of California, Oregon, and Washington to secede from the Union into a new alliance called Cascadia. TIB planned to redefine democracy by declaring the Electoral College vote invalid. If Trump had a clear win, they would have claimed only the popular vote to be valid. They contemplated rousing tens of thousands of BLM supporters to take to the streets and shut down the federal government to make the country ungovernable. This is a clear-cut revolutionary tactic. They bring about it in a Time magazine article published shortly after the 2024, and the same program, he reports, is being set up right now for the 2024 election. Ace, your thoughts.
Well, if you're one to worry about the stolen election, I would call your attention to an episode of Freedom Enough that I did a few months ago. It's Freedom Enough number 16, the Dominion Voting Systems versus Fox News fake lawsuit, right? So, after the stolen election, Fox News did do some stories, including Tucker Carlson reporting that the Dominion voting machines were rigged in such a way that the software would sort of electronically give votes meant for Donald Trump and instead give them to Joe Biden. Eventually, Dominion filed a lawsuit, like a defamation type lawsuit against Fox News. And the result was just a total like puppet show, fake lawsuit. They litigated for a couple years and they conducted discovery. Now, if you were Fox News and you wanted to prove that those voting machines were rigged, of course, obviously, you would seek those voting machines and the software that's in those voting machines. You would request and demand those in discovery. You would issue a subpoena and you would have your expert break down the code and say, look, right here at this line of the code, this is exactly where it gives these votes to the other guy. Well, Fox News never did that. They never requested anything like that. In fact, they did not even plead the defense of truth. Okay. Instead, they tried to request emails between Dominion voting systems and Hugo Chavez, right? Who, like, the deposed dictator from frickin' wherever it is, like down in South America, who also alleged to have stolen elections. Okay. Just no part of this lawsuit was on the up and up. Of course, at the end, Fox News settles and gives Dominion voting systems like $800 million. It was an absolute total farce, right? I disagree with the idea that Trump threatened the ruling establishment. I don't see what the evidence is for that. I mean, to me, Trump is just a consummate insider and has been his whole life, and he was president for 4 years. I don't know what he did other than maintain the status quo. Gradual decay into what now is just simply postmodern nonsense. There's a lot of fingers that you could point there, but you should really look at the effect that this guy Franz Boas had during his 50-year reign as the head of anthropology at Columbia University and so many others. And regarding transgender, which is a hugely important issue right now, I do want to mention that I'm right now involved in what should be a very, very important lawsuit. I have drafted and filed through this attorney on behalf of a client, a lawsuit against University of California, San Francisco, who performed transgender surgery on a minor child without our client's permission, who was the parent, and in the face of an injunction that specifically said they weren't allowed to do that. So if you want to learn more about that, look me up, pmjmp.org. Check it out on Freedom Enough on Speak Free Radio. Go ahead.
Oh, Jeff. Ace, you're just doing fantastic. Our final top 10 story, I'll just abbreviate. Number 10, the globalist threat continues. Experts admit the WEF is planning to erase 4 billion people within years. The World Economic Forum and various globalist leaders are fervently advocating for the phasing out of fossil fuels, presenting their ambitious net zero goal as a cornerstone of the WEF and the UN's Comprehensive Plan for Humanity, officially encapsulated in Agenda 2030 and Agenda 2050, to diminish reliance on fossil fuels by 2030, completely eradicating their use by 2050. However, leading experts are sounding alarm bells, warning the potential consequences could be nothing short of catastrophic, resulting in the death of over 4 billion or more. There's no doubt about it. This is the plan. This is the agenda. Meanwhile, the World Health Organization is calling for masking, physical distancing over a mysterious illness. They're going to invent these again and again, just as they did with a COVID. Media reports say hospitals in Beijing and Lingnan are overwhelmed with cases of undiagnosed pneumonia, primarily affecting kids. Children are presenting symptoms of lung inflammation in high fever, but not of the coughing associated with COVID. And UN launches Gates-funded global digital ID program as expert warn of a totalitarian nightmare. The UN developmental program said its 50 and 5 campaign will spur the construction of an underlying network of components, digital public infrastructure, a mechanism for surveillance and control that combines digital ID, central bank, digital currencies, vaccine passports, and carbon footprint tracking, paving the way for 15-minute smart cities, future lockdowns, and systems of social credit. It's absolutely stunning what's going on here, and I welcome your thoughts about it, my friend.
Well, I mean, climate change is such a transparent fraud, it's hard to believe that anybody buys into this. Look, the climate has always changed. The Earth's climate has never remained static. If it were to remain static, that would be extremely unusual. We've had ice ages. We've had warm ages. CO2 is plant food. It is positively good for the atmosphere and for the environment. If anybody's interested, I've done a couple shows on that too. So you can search on my website on pmjmp.org. Or what is it, Freedom Enough, number 17. The title was Bill Nye, The Science Lie. But I would really recommend looking into the work of Patrick Moore, who's a scientist. He is one of the founders of Greenpeace, but he has since left that and spoken out and done quite a bit of very, very important work on just exposing the whole lie of carbon, of climate change and global warming and the nonsense that it is. Yeah, obviously, this is just a hoax to try to take control of energy and to further control the people. It's just one of the many ideas that they've had for how to get that done.
Ace, you've been just spectacular today. I know this was an unexpected turn of events to review the top 10 stories, but your comments have been simply spot on. I'm very, very pleased. It just so happens, by the way, that when we return on the 3rd of January, 2024, Joe Olson, who's an extraordinary engineer with whom I've done a 10-part series debunking global warming, will be my guest. And among the subject we'll address is the enormity of the fraud. Ace, take this opportunity to review once again where our audience can learn more about your work.
Right. Well, long ago, I think it might have been back in 2008, I spoke at your scholars conference on 9/11 issues, and I presented some of my original research on how we know that no real airplanes crashed into the World Trade Center or anywhere else back on 9/11. So I've been sort of doing controversial research for a long time. My website is the Postmodern Justice Media Project. Do focus on court corruption and trying to expose that. And that's at pmjmp.org. There's still other things that survive on the internet, but there are links at pmjmp.org for like my 9/11, The Great American Psy Opera, which was a 10-part video series that I did on 9/11. There are links for Psy Opera that you can find on my site. And there's other stuff too. So I always enjoy hearing from people, especially if you want to take me on and debate me on, because to me, where all of this ought to go is towards voluntarism, which is the simple idea that all human interaction should be voluntary. And that's an idea that most people don't disagree with until you realize that that means that there's just not a place for a ruling class. There's just not a place for this beast, this Leviathan, this evil called government. And so that's where it's what I'm all about. And I really enjoy having conversations with people about these issues. So thanks for having me on, Jim, once more. And here's to hopefully a much better 2024.
Let me just add that Ace Baker has impressed me so much, I made him my leadoff batter for the Volkswagen Conspiracy Conference of 2023. 23, which is available to the public. It was always live from the beginning and free. You can find it all the presentations, and including the question and answer session. We're talking about 24 by some of the best experts on the most important topics are available at my BitChute channel, Jim Fetzer. Ace just hit it out of the ballpark talking about false flags. You want to start there, simply sensational. My own on Saturday, and it was a two-day conference, the 16th and the 17th, was on JFK and Sandy Hook, what we know now that we didn't know then. And interestingly, the following day, while Joe Olson was to be my first speaker, I had prepared a backup in case I lost one of my speakers. Joe had a cold, couldn't do it, and I was pursuing the very issue Ace addressed, the 9/11 crash sites, how we know what didn't happen, because none of those 9/11 aircraft crashed on 9/11. Two of the planes, Flight 11, North Tower, and 77 Pentagon, were not even in the air. The other two, 93 and 175, were still in the air after they allegedly had crashed in Shanksville or hit the South Tower, where I obtained FAA registration data showing that the aircraft used for those flights were not even taken out of service or deregistered until 28 September 2005, raising questions, how can planes that were not even in the air have crashed on 9/11, and how can planes that crashed on 9/11 have still been in the air 4 years later? Do yourself a benefit. Do yourself a treat. Check out those presentations. Pick and choose the ones that interest you the most and share them with others. Meanwhile, I close by joining with Ace in wishing you a better 2024 than we had in 2023 and encouraging you to spend as much time with your family, your friends, the people you love and care about, because we do not know how much time we have left.
Travels to Earth through the rainbow crystal bubbles from the furthest reaches of space and time, across the dimensions, through the elements, and in harmony with the colors of the universe. Through her mastery of abstract stream of consciousness malapropisms, she weaves a web of comic, satiric, cosmic conversation. Her subjects can range from Norman, the goose next door, to astrology and earth changes, and into the deep recesses of the soul matrix. She holds a wealth of of knowledge on herbs, plants, and astrology. Join Mona and her guests on Adventures of a Feral Hippie as she touches the earthly radio waves 5 days a week at 2 p.m. Monday to Friday.